Talk to us now and go to the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT. For the news and views you can't hear anywhere else, it's the Steve Hook Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All right, welcome to the Steve Hook Show on TNT Radio. So happy to have you. So happy to have you with us. We've got a big show for you today. I got my buddy David Webb joining us, and we've got a lot to talk about with David. Today, Elon Omar, a completely different Ilhan Omar, I guess is the way you pronounce it. She's been booted from the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Good. Very good. Great move. Wonderful move. AOC is having none of it. She's furious. Who cares what the bartender thinks? But we'll chat with Dave about that. And of course, now, I don't know if you saw the New York Post, but the front cover of the New York Post today is hysterical. It's a photo of Hunter, a none too flattering photo. If I had to guess, I'd say he's working damn near an eight ball of blow in that photo. And he's all just bug eyed and looking, looking blown out, looking geeked out of his mind on cocaine. And the headline is, "It's mine." So his side has finally admitted that, yeah, the laptop is mine. Now, of course, they're kind of backtracking on that and saying, well, it's mine, but we don't think that it was shared legally, blah, blah, blah. So I look forward to chatting with David Webb about that as well. David Webb, of course, from his own Sirius Satellite show. What is it? David Webb Show on Patriot 125 on Sirius XM. And he, of course, is a Fox News contributor and a friend of mine. We've become dear friends over the years, so I'm very happy to welcome him back to the program in just a couple of moments. However, right now, well, we're going to take a quick breather, and then we're going to come back and talk to my man Ruckus.
Calling out the big wigs.
The government works for us, not the other way around.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, so it is time to check in with my buddy Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus. Now, get this. A federal judge in Wisconsin, I wonder who appointed this judge, ruled yesterday that a wrongful death lawsuit filed against Kyle Rittenhouse and others may proceed. So that's what we're going to do with that's what we're going to talk with him about. Here's Ruckus now. Hey, Ruckus, hey, brother, what's going on with this now?
Yes. So obviously, they found him not guilty of all the previous charges back in the day. But now there's one person, specifically the father of Anthony Huber, that is one of the two men killed by Rittenhouse, who is filing this wrongful death lawsuit against Kyle Rittenhouse, as well as others. They're naming Rittenhouse, police officers, and some city officials as defendants. They are accusing the officers of allowing for a dangerous situation that violated his son's constitutional rights and resulted in his death. Let's just ignore for the moment that his son was trying to kill Kyle with a skateboard, if I'm not mistaken. Anthony Huber's father, John Huber, also alleged that Rittenhouse, who was 17 at the time of the shootings, conspired with law enforcement in order to cause harm to protesters. Not sure where this is coming from, but John Huber is seeking unspecified damages from city officials, officers, and Rittenhouse. U.S. District Judge Lynn Adelman has dismissed motions that were filed by Rittenhouse and the government defendants who were seeking to dismiss the lawsuit. In allowing the case against Rittenhouse and the others to proceed, the judge said that Huber's death could, quote, plausibly be regarded as having been proximately caused by the actions of the governmental defendants, end quote. Man, I hate legalese, Steve. Sorry about that. Rittenhouse, he, of course, was charged with homicide, attempted homicide, and reckless endangerment for killing Anthony Huber and Joseph Rosenbaum and wounding a third person with his AR-style semi-automatic rifle back in the summer of 2020 during, of course, a tumultuous night of protests over the shooting of, in that case, Jacob Blake by a white Kenosha police officer, Jacob Blake himself being a black man, sparking all of that stuff. Rittenhouse has gone to Kenosha. At that time, he went to Kenosha from his home nearby in Antioch, Illinois, after businesses had been ransacked and burned in the nights that followed Blake's shooting. He was joined by other armed civilians on the streets who were carrying weapons, he himself carrying a weapon that authorities said was illegally purchased for him because of his age. He first shot and killed Rosenbaum, age 36, in the parking lot of an auto dealership. And as Rittenhouse ran from the scene, he stumbled and fell. At that time, Anthony Huber, 26, struck Rittenhouse with his skateboard and tried to disarm him. Rittenhouse fell to the ground, shooting Anthony Huber to death and wounding another demonstrator by the name of Gage Grosskreutz, age 27. He was acquitted of all of these charges in November 2001 after he testified that he was acting in self-defense. So Rittenhouse's attorney Shane Martin said in a statement, quote, "We disagree that Mr. Huber has stated any plausible claims against Kyle, but although this ruling allows the case to proceed for now, it does not change the facts. As most of America fully understands, the only reason Kyle came into contact with Anthony Huber that night is that Huber struck Kyle on the head with a skateboard and knocked him to the ground while Kyle was fleeing a mob of other attackers and running toward Kenosha police in order to turn himself in." Then he's last part is Huber then tried to forcibly disarm Kyle as he lay in the streets before striking Kyle in the head a second time. Those blows caused Kyle injuries that he still suffers from today. There simply was no conspiracy between Kyle and the Kenosha police to single out Anthony Huber. And as one jury has already found, Kyle's actions that night were not wrongful and were taken in self-defense, end quote. And just an update is that this is just one of several ongoing civil lawsuits that have been filed in the wake of the shootings. Last year, Grosskreutz filed a similar lawsuit against Rittenhouse. So there you have it. What do you think about all that?
Gage Grosskreutz guy, he had part of his bicep blown off, essentially. And I remember those videos well, Ruckus. You remember them well, obviously. That was open and shut case of self-defense. And anybody that argues different is arguing it from a partisan perspective. As simple as that. I mean, and I would like to think that he'll get a fair trial. I'm sure he will. It's a civil trial, so I'm sure he'll probably get a fairly decent trial out of it. I think the judge should have just said, nope, this isn't going to happen. The case has been tried in a criminal law, and he was found to have been he was exonerated. But, you know, hey, listen, man, let him go for it. Kyle ought to offer a countersuit if he's still suffering injuries from the skateboard whack. Ruckus, you look like a guy that used to skateboard once upon a time. And you may still, I don't know. But I do know that I did. And I know that the trucks on a skateboard, if you hit somebody in the head with those things, they can do some real damage. It's not lightweight stuff. He hit him, like you said, twice, right? Is that what it was? Twice?
Yep, absolutely. And you're correct in your assumption. I have, and I do still, actually, at age 46, I'm no Tony Hawk, so no tricks. but I do still, that's one of my primary forms of transportation and a backup self-defense, because everybody who rides a skateboard knows how dangerous those trucks are. You can absolutely kill a person with that, and many instances where that has actually happened. So, Kyle Rittenhouse was clearly, as proven in a court of law, that's how we do things here in America, folks. Right. In case you're confused, that's the way this goes. There's due process and law and order and everything. He defended himself from what could have literally killed him. I think what's going on here, Steve, there's two things I think going on because of the timing of this.
Yeah.
Number one, the gun debate has been raging right now because of the the brace rule that just passed, which is totally unconstitutional and a grave error. Yeah, I hope so. I think this court case is going to get thrown out too. So this is just adding to that political conversation. So I think it serves that purpose. I don't think this is really – I think somebody somewhere was pressured to do this. Somebody approached probably Mr. Huber and said, hey – here's what you should do. And he's like, yeah, that's a great idea. That's what I think. The other thing is, too, we're noticing a huge backlash, against police officers recently in the wake of what happened. You know, we don't need to talk about that. That was so disturbing. But very, I think. Because they're naming police officers in this lawsuit. So I think this is more, again.
So this might be a little bit backlash against the Tyre Nichols murder is what it was. And it was in Memphis. Well, I think you're right. I don't know that it's going to go anywhere. I mean, I certainly do. I don't think Kyle Rittenhouse owes anybody a dime. And by the way, the car dealership that he was protecting, it was kind of a friend of a friend deal. He said, yeah, I'll go along and help. Kyle Rittenhouse wanted to be a police officer. That's out now. But that's what he wanted to do. He was all about, let's just have a little law and order and I'll come down there and help you out. He had attended people during the course of that evening with first aid, and tried to help people. And it was only when the first fella came in, basically, and if you saw those videos, that guy says, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you. I don't know about you, but when I was 17 years old, if a whole group of people start surrounding me screaming, they're going to kill me, I might think that my life is in danger. So kind of common sense, not so common in Kenosha that night, but, I'm hopeful that this gets sorted out. But anyway, crazy story, Ruckus, as always, thank you for keeping on top of those things, brother. I appreciate that. And we'll look forward to chatting with you again tomorrow night, right?
Absolutely, senor. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Okay, there you go. Thank you, Ruckus. Okay, again, ladies and gentlemen, coming up a little bit later, in just a few moments, in fact, we're going to be chatting with my buddy David Webb, and we're going to be talking about all things. Well, you know what? David is such a great guest because I can just basically say, what do you think about so-and-so? And Dave can just go from there. He's great at riffing, and we've got a lot to talk about. As I mentioned before, Ilhan Omar has been booted from the House Congressional Foreign Affairs Committee. That can only be a good thing as far as I can tell. The Hunter revelations, not that they're revelations, folks. We need to stress this. They are not Hunter Biden revelations. Hunter Biden, you know, the laptop was his. Can we all agree to that? The laptop was his. And it's not about the cocaine pictures, and it's not about the smoking meth, and it's not about the photographs with him with various women of the evening. That's what the media wants you to focus on, because then they can use the defense. They're just going after a drug addict. How pathetic are these Republicans? Everybody knows Hunter had a problem. Millions of Americans have problems, and they try to address them and get themselves back on track. And Hunter has done that. And how dare these Republicans try and drag Hunter's name through the mud for making a mistake of being an addict? That's what they're trying to do. What they don't want you to know is everything else that's on that laptop that proves beyond the shadow of a doubt that the Biden international family of grift is up to its eyeballs in corruption, mainly the big guy himself, Joe Biden, and they want to avoid that like the plague. I don't know why Hunter is coming out and saying, yeah, the laptop was mine. I think it's probably his legal team that is just trying to get in front of this. They're probably really concerned with protecting him. But what about the old man? What does this do to Joe Biden? I don't know. It could be big, but it could be nothing. You know, the question isn't, is it going to be damning? It's already damning. The question is the Department of Justice going to do a damn thing about it? Well, I can't wait to get David Webb's take on that, and he'll join us on the other side of the break. You're listening to The Steve Hook Show on TNT Radio. We'll be right back after this.
You should hear what Bruce DeTorres is talking about on World Stage.
Fascinating, this former actor taking it personally when our representatives are proven to lie to us, because I was a professional liar. I was an actor, but I was honest. You paid your money, you sat in the audience, and you knew I was faking and fooling with whatever we were doing on stage. We tried to make it look and sound and feel really, really real, but we earned your money because you knew that we were fooling and pretending, and I really resent those who lie. And also I'm fascinated by what it takes to create an illusion. And the Pentagon, back in, I think, 2017, admitted that they can't account for 21 trillion $1 trillion since 1998. With a $21 trillion budget, you can create, give, and show and convince the world absolutely anything that you want.
World Stage and Bruce DeTorres on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at pva.org.
You're listening to Steve Hook
on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All right, welcome back to the Steve Hook Show, and we are very happy to welcome back our buddy David Webb. Of course, David Webb from the David Webb Show, Patriot 125 on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Of course, David is also a contributor and a longtime contributor to Fox News, and just a general all-around great guy. And it's good to see you, Dave. You're looking good, brother. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I'm not looking too bad for radio, am I?
Thanks, man. You're looking better than I am. I can assure you of that. But anyway, it's good to see you, man. I mentioned as we were going in here about the Hunter story. I know this is as I've said on my podcast, this is like a beating the desiccated remains of a long dead horse. But finally, it looks like Hunter's team is kind of copping to it, trying to walk it back a little bit. I think this is probably for his defense. They're saying this stuff. I think that they know the heat is really on. How do you see this thing playing out, and is it going to touch the president? Because we know that beyond the pictures of the meth and the hookers and the blow and all the other crap that's on there, there's some very, very serious allegations of just abject corruption from James Biden to Joe Biden to Hunter Biden to the niece to everybody. What's your take on the whole thing, Dave?
If you're playing a strategy from his side, one of the ways would be to admit to some things that are there to try and draw attention away. That's what lawyers will tend to do, right? You admit to one crime, avoid the others. The bigger crime, when you mentioned Joe Biden and Jim Biden included, is that selling of office is a bigger crime, which leads right to the Oval Office. So in one way, Hunter may have to be the sacrificial lamb in a sense of taking the heat. The question is, will the DOJ look to protect the president, the current president of the United States, from actions while he was not president? And here there's a policy in place of not indicting a sitting president, regardless while in office. So they may play that role. And it's kind of like the Clinton game, what you can actually charge and convict versus what you allege. So that's probably why they'll do that. But I'm also with you that we've got to look past, and the Republican Party and every other party involved in this. Not that you ignore the crimes, the felonies, the drugs, the prostitution, and statute of limitations might be a role in that. But you've got to look for the greater crime here, which is substantiated by Tony Bobulinski, Devin Archer, the activities at Rosemont Seneca, and an investigation that was in some way pushed aside at Morgan Stanley when they were looking into the cash transfers, because Morgan Stanley was the cash transfer company that was being used by Burisma to send what initially came out to be somewhere around $88,000 a month through to Rosemont Seneca, which then would conflict with Biden's claims that he didn't know about what was going on between Hunter and Devin Archer and the other partners. including the picture taken at Shinnecock, which is a golf club out in the Hamptons. I've been there. And a friend of mine happened to be there the day they were there when the picture was taken. And that's how I got clued into that. So there's a lot of problems here that they may try to sacrifice Hunter and other things. We can't fall for it.
I think only Joe Biden would be willing to throw his own son under the bus to save the big
business partners. For lack of a better term, you take the heat because you want to protect the investment going forward.
Well, you mentioned Morgan Stanley. Now, Morgan Stanley was the middleman for the Burisma transactions. But what about, what's her name, Buskaya or whatever? I can't, it's a Russian name. The former, the widow of the former very corrupt Moscow mayor who wired $3.5 million or something like that. That's in the on the laptop. Then apparently, according to Schweitzer's books, CCP has roughly paid $31.5 million to the Biden family. God, there's corruption from one end of the globe to the other with this family, and most of it is on that laptop.
You know, how did they get, what's his name, the mobster in Chicago? They didn't get him for the murders. They didn't get him for
Capone,
the killing.
Yeah.
Capone, they got him on taxes. Follow the money. And the money, because especially in today's world, you have electronic records, you have transfer records, and I can't go into it any more than this, but I'll tell you that there is a cache of transfer documents in Morgan Stanley. And when that was shut down after the suspicious transaction review was done, it does exist. So that means that there is more trouble down the pike if others come forward, and Morgan Stanley will have to get into this somehow, because there was an investigation by the SEC internally and internally within Morgan Stanley.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, okay, so the SEC got involved. Morgan Stanley, apparently after doing the wrong thing for quite some time, decided, boy, we better pull up stakes here and get out of this damn thing. Now we've got a house that is, you know, run by the Republicans. I can only assume, David, that they're going to go after this hard and heavy, but they have got a full plate already. The laptop aside, they've got all kinds of stuff. Does President Biden survive all of this stuff? Because it looks to me like it's all starting to, I mean, we knew they went and they raided the Rehoboth Beach house the other day. Wilmington a week or two before that, the Penn Biden Center, and then all of a sudden, and this is what's suspicious to me is the timing of it all, then all of a sudden we get, whoops, maybe that laptop is mine. Are they panicking?
I don't know if they're panicking. I think they're facing, they have to own up to some things. I don't know whether they're panicking or not. There's an investigation into Hunter Biden. You can only stop so many facts from coming out. And because it's not just within the DOJ, you've got copies of the hard drive. Obviously, Rudy has all of this. John McIsaac. I had John McIsaac on my show the other day. This is all real. They can no longer contain it. We'd learn less if it was contained within the Department of Justice and under Merrick Garland, to where they could protect Biden and the Biden crime family. But here it's out. So they're going to have to own certain things because it's already out. You have Miranda Devine's reporting at the New York Post, John Solomon, you got others. So there's no way to stop it. The question is, how much can they contain? To the question of whether Biden survives it or not, I think there's a twofold problem for the Republicans here. One is politically an impeachment in the House, for example, of Biden for the selling of office would go through. It wouldn't go through the Senate with the Democrats in control. It would have to be that bad for Democrats to say in a Nixonian kind of way related to President.
Oh, boy.
You can't govern just anymore. With that.
Yeah, well, that's just it. That's just it, though, David. I mean, I don't know that the Democrats would ever turn their back on Joe Biden now for a number of reasons. First of all, because they're Democrats and I don't trust them as far as I can throw them. Secondly, who do they have? Who do they have? They're going to hand the oval off to Kamala. That doesn't seem likely. I just think that Joe's tits in a ringer here on this thing, but I am hesitant to believe that Garland will do anything about it. And if he can't be indicted, which he can't, we know that. But this certainly rises to the level of impeachment. And you're right. If it gets to the House, big deal. Okay, great. They've impeached him. Now it goes to the Senate and it dies there.
I would weaponize the impeachment against him in the sense of for real, not the way they went after Trump. They have legitimate, potentially legitimate reasons for impeachment. I'll say this. Given the choice between a weakened and lame duck Joe Biden and a Kamala Harris, I would prefer that there be a weakened and lame duck Joe Biden than a dyed-in-the-wool ideologue. And unfortunately, too many Americans may make the mistake they did with Barack Obama, where they thought it's cool to vote for the first, quote, black president, and then they would go vote for Kamala Harris in a race. Now, she may or may not be able to get to the nomination process because others want in, but I prefer a weakened and a lame duck Joe Biden.
Me too. Well, listen, let's take a quick break. We'll pick it up when we get back on the other side of it. I want to talk about a Kamala Harris possible nomination down the road, maybe sooner than we think. And also, if that's going to happen, why do they seem to be courting Gavin Newsom? We'll find out as David Webb, our guest, joins us today. And we'll be right back with him on the Steve Hook Show on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. The United States and the Philippines on Thursday announced plans to bolster the U.S. military presence in the Southeast Asian country as part of efforts to deter the Chinese Communist Party's mounting aggression in the South China Sea. According to the United Nations Global Report on Trafficking in Persons for 2022, the number of people detected as trafficked dropped by 11% last year. The United States has opened an embassy in the Solomon Islands as it seeks to boost diplomatic relations in the Pacific as a counter to China.
We wear the PPE and wade through the muck so you don't have to. Never miss our thought-provoking take on the latest news and current affairs. Take TNT Radio wherever you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Okay, that was short and sweet. We are back with David Webb. Talking about just about anything Dave wants to talk about. But as we went to break, we were discussing the danger that Joe Biden may or may not find himself in. And let's just hypothetical this thing out, David, for a second, if we could. Joe Biden survives it. I think he will. I think they'll drag their feet. I know if it does get to the Senate, the Senate's going to just kick it to the curb. They're not going to follow through. But just because I don't believe in the moral imperative of the Democrat Party. Let's put it that way. I just don't think that really exists anymore, at least as we're in such a hyper-partisan place right now in history. So now we've got 2024 right around the corner. Maybe a lot of this stuff is being brought up to just dissuade Biden from running again because he's been been chirping that he plans on running again. Maybe some people... this speculation, obviously, but maybe some folks in high places are saying that's not going to play. We've got to go somewhere else. Now, naturally, the vice president would get the first shot at it in most instances. But it does seem like they're courting other people. I mentioned Gavin Newsom. And I just think that Democrats have kind of painted themselves into this identity politics corner where you're going to reject. She may not be African American. She's Jamaican Indian American. She's certainly black as far as the media is concerned. Are you going to reject her? And plus, she's got all the right body parts, let's admit it, for the historic vote. Are they going to reject her and go for somebody like a Gavin Newsom, which is probably the whitest guy on the West Coast? I mean, how does that play?
You know, it's interesting. It seems Gavin Newsom courts Gavin Newsom more than the base and the voters would. While he may be the governor in California, that's a Democrat vote, not necessarily a Gavin Newsom vote. The idea that he's the next shining Pelosi offshoot, right? Family member to step up. You're right. It's going to be difficult for them to explain removing Kamala Harris from it. But when you look at the bench overall, the Democrats really don't have a qualified national player. Pete Buttigieg could barely get, 1.5% in the last round. Kamala Harris dropped out with less than 2% of support among Democrats. Gavin Newsom looks good in California, but how does he play in South Carolina? How does he play in New Hampshire? How does he play in Georgia, in other states where they need the vote? How does he play in Colorado and other areas?
Ohio.
So, in Ohio, for that matter, that's another one. So yeah. Democrats don't have much of a bench right now, and that's their bigger problem. So can they remarket Kamala Harris and try to go for historic? I don't think it works. She had to be coupled with Joe Biden in a very unique time and circumstance in order to become vice president. And that's really what she is, a time and circumstance.
But don't people look – well, don't you think, David, don't you think people look at Kamala Harris and realize, at least – I mean, maybe this is just me thinking, but – we all know why Joe Biden picked Kamala Harris. And it was all about identity politics. And other than a cackle and word salad, I don't know what she brings to the table. My buddy, and you know Tom Del Beccaro. I talked to Tom Del Beccaro. He ran against her in Senate, of course, in California. He lost, but he made a good run of it. And he basically says, you know, the funny thing about Kamala Harris is, she's despised in the California Democrat Party. They don't even like her there. So I don't know how that she would ever get any kind of national prominence. I mean, given what, and to her defense, she has been saddled with an absolute horrible administration. And beyond,
yeah, you know, she had a chance. Where Kamala Harris, who is not smart, there's just no other way to put it. I know an attorney who fought against her in court, someone who was against her in a big case, a good friend of mine. He said it was basically like going back to high school, something like that. So she's not an intelligent person. She knows how to hit a demagoguery type line in a moment. So she doesn't translate well, kind of like the Hillary Clinton factor. You know, no matter what you say or do, people just don't trust you and they don't believe you. She was given an opportunity. If she had stepped, she would be more dangerous if she had stepped out of the ideology of the hardcore progressive left and the open borders left as sheriff of the border and stood up and said, this is what we want to do to protect Americans. But she didn't. So she's done politically. She's like a Stacey Abrams in a different role, where she looks good to the base, but then look at the base that has to vote for her or the voters that have to choose to vote for her. It's identity politics more typical of the left. To be fair, in presidential politics, on the right, it's can your base identify with you, which is why you typically team a presidential and a vice presidential candidate. Say a Trump and Pence. Pence brought in the evangelical, the Midwest, he brought in a block of voters. He was a plus. So Kamala Harris is such a negative. Who would they put as the plus? Who's on their bench that becomes the plus for her? Buttigieg is an abject failure and a caricature. Newsom does not want to be second, if you look at it that way. And who else do they really have?
I don't know. I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of the DNC here. I don't know. I don't know that there's any Democrat that has the national standing. And then now let's juxtapose that to the Republican bench. The Republican bench is strong. Obviously Trump is right there at the top of it because let me ask you this about Trump. Let's kind of move it to that side of the aisle here. Do you think, because I'm starting to hear whisperings that people are like, yeah, Trump was great. We loved his policies. God, I loved he was a fighter. He punched back. He was a counterpuncher. But man, I don't know if I'm ready to live through that whole show again. And they're going to come after him. And maybe it's time to move on. Maybe we ought to give DeSantis a shot. Do you think Trump is going to roll this thing, or do you think that the base is kind of starting to soften a little bit?
I don't think anybody knows. I think a lot of not. I think I see a lot of people writing the story. Look, you're right. There are some people that have moved on. They said, "I love the policy. I don't want to see the dogfight every day." And I don't think lightning strikes twice for just about anybody, but not for Trump in a similar circumstance. He captured that populist. He captured the forgotten man and woman in America in his first run. Other people are writing stories about DeSantis. He hasn't said anything, which is smart on his part. And me personally, just my personal opinion, finish out your two terms as a governor, become stronger. But the Republicans have other candidates. And you know me, I like the primary system. Because
sure, yeah.
I believe in our Republican approach to this, you know, as a republic where the people make that choice. And that tells us and guides us to the next step, which is the value of the vote. Let's say there are enough to support Trump for the top of the ticket. That means there's a second person that will get a lot of votes or the complement that could come in. You hear Nikki Haley mentioning that she's going to make an announcement. You have others. We don't know how this goes. And I prefer to wait and be more correct than be first and just talk about it. You know, and it's a mistake I think the pushers are doing out there in the political consulting class. The consultant class is a problem. They're trying to tell the people what to think, and we need to focus on what we need and who can best do that. But the second thing is every president, no, not necessarily the second thing, but an important thing, every president has to have something in order to govern. He needs a support, or she needs a support system. Republicans need to focus on the Senate. There are 8 competitive seats in the next round of Senate elections. They've got to deliver on the Senate and keep the House. And if they do that, if there's the next president is a Republican, the ability to govern gets better. And at the same time, we're losing some of the McConnell Republicans, the kind of guy who punishes Rick Scott and Mike Lee for going up against them, and remove someone from Senate finance in Rick Scott, who has more experience than just about any other senator in corporate America, as well as being governor of the third largest state in the nation. So there's got to be a flushing out, and that will give any next president a better ability to govern.
Well, you mentioned Mitch McConnell and the flushing out. I'd like to flush him right out, but Mitch McConnell, I knew he was a complete phony when I saw him at CPAC and walk on stage and hoist a long gun over his head. I'm like, boy, what a pandering fool this guy is, especially when I know all of the dirty tricks he has done to conservatives and Tea Party Republicans in the last decade or so. Do you think that the party, well, if not the party, at least the base of the party, is starting to wise up to who Mitch McConnell is? And Mitch McConnell is in it for Mitch McConnell, it seems like.
They have for some time, and now they're in a better position to act. Look at the growth of the House Freedom Caucus. Typically, the progression in politics in the U.S. is you start winning the lower seats. They rise up in more and more. So more members of the state legislatures, more reddening, even if it's close numbers where Democrats have a majority. Then you get more congressional seats, even though it's a slim majority in the House. But the votes in lost races was very close. That's going to translate. So the people have wisened up because the demands have increased and the demands have changed for something to be done about the problems within government with rampant spending. Look at the upcoming debt ceiling battle that is due. Look at the demand for regular order, the 12 appropriations in the House and those subcommittees. That's an important role for Kay Granger. And there's somebody else we should be watching closely, because as someone who chairs appropriations, she's not necessarily the best conservative Republican when it comes to fiscal issues and smaller government issues or effective government issues. So this all pushes a McConnell who's more in the elitist category than just Republican category. My personal term, they're amoral elitists, and their power, whether in the majority or the minority, is what they're more interested in keeping. McConnell knows how to win and wield power when he does. He got Trump his nominees for the Supreme Court because right then it served his purpose as well. They were convening interests. And typically in politics, for better or worse at times, you have rarely do you have anything but interests, and do your interests align in the moment?
Wow. Yeah, well, I still insist that McConnell is just so in it for McConnell, and as you stated, I really do hope that McConnell decides to, you know, I've decided I want to spend more time with the family and give us that speech.
Really, David, you want to go home to Elaine Chao? It's nothing personal against her. The woman is another abject failure in Washington, D.C. in transportation during the Bush administration, in transportation during the Trump administration. I interviewed her. I was the one who, while interviewing her, she wanted to end it and leave because she didn't know how to do her job. I mean, literally tried to make nice with McConnell. That was what Donald did, in my opinion. And as a result, we got a bad Secretary of Transportation.
That's right. No worse than Pete Buttigieg. All right, okay, well, listen, we got to take a short break. We'll come back, and I want to talk about these committee seats because Ilhan Omar just lost hers. Well, at least one of hers on the Foreign Relations Committee. I want to get your take on that in just a sec. My guest today is David Webb, a Fox News contributor, and of course, host of the very popular David Webb Show on SiriusXM Patriot 125. He will join us. Well, he continued to join us on the other side of the break. This is the Steve Hook Show on TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Misinformation, a word that means different things to different people. The dictionary says it's false or inaccurate information, especially that which is deliberately intended to deceive. The left labels anything that dares to contradict what they say are facts as misinformation, especially when it comes to COVID. And they want to be the ones who decide what is and what isn't misinformation. California took it a step further. They codified it into law in 2022. And last week, a federal judge stopped enforcement of the COVID-19 misinformation law, which would punish doctors for straying from the contemporary scientific consensus on the pandemic. SFGate says Judge William Shub wrote that its definition of misinformation is grammatically incoherent and thus unconstitutionally vague. He had previously told California's lawyers that their definition of misinformation was nonsense. The ruling is temporary while the litigation continues, but this is a clear victory for free speech and common sense. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
This message is for Karina, our mom who finished her high school diploma at age 28. Hi, Mom. It's Amethyst and Nicholas.
Congratulations on getting your diploma.
You worked so hard and have taught us so much.
We love you.
When you graduate, they graduate. Finish your high school diploma for you and for them. Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free and supportive adult education centers near you. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
This is the Steve Hook Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Steve Hook Show. I am Steve Hook, and it's always great to have you with us. I'm talking to David Webb, our guest today. David, you'd made mention, and you just kind of stumbled right into the next topic I wanted to get into, and that was these committee seats and how things are going to shake out with the Republicans. Now, we know that Ilhan Omar was booted today by a straight party line vote, 216 to 211. So she's out. AOC threw a fit. She was about to throw her bar rag across the House chamber. She was really, really ticked off about it. Slammed her notebook around. No more drinks for you. What do you think about that? I mean, I, for one, I don't think Ilhan Omar or AOC, for that matter, belongs anywhere near the House Foreign Relations Committee.
Look, Ilhan Omar is a pathetic fraud and someone who has not even served her district, without a doubt. You've got problems in that district. You've got Somali gangs running the street, preying on other Somali businessmen in the largest concentration in the United States. They, and I have spoken to people in that district, business owners, even members of the police departments, and she is absent. She's like AOC. She has no presence in the district or action. So AOC can put on a show, and I don't care. It's the congressional equivalent of maybe dancing on a bar, and who cares? It's a show, get me a cold drink that I like. But in all seriousness, this is a woman supported by the Council on American Islamic Relations, which is an unindicted co-conspirator going back to the Holy Land Foundation terror trials. Terror
Ibrahim Hooper.
Trials. Yeah, right. Exactly. So why is she there? She's a known anti-Semite. She's a demagogue. She's another pop culture princess from the far left. And she doesn't belong on a committee because she's not qualified. Look, I can take a rational Democrat in a sense that someone I can debate. She's not even close to that, and neither is AOC. They love their position. They do very little but cause problems, and they don't even attack the issues they claim to care about from their perspective. So yeah. She doesn't belong on a committee, no matter what Hakeem Jeffries or others may believe in the Progressive Caucus.
Yeah, well, I agree. She's a rabble-rouser is what she is. Just like AOC, just like Rashida Tlaib, they're rabble-rousers. That's who they are. And the thing that's so sad about it, David, she may be, she may be in Congress and absent from her own district, but you know damn good and well her own district's going to vote her right back into office. They are. Just like AOC, she's going to get, that's a seat for life if she wants it. Am I wrong about that?
Sadly, you're not. The incumbency rate in politics overall, but especially in these deep blue Democrat-controlled districts, you can go all across this country and find them in every state just about. The Baltimore contingent, the Flint, Michigan, other areas. And they have to reach a point where it's so bad they have to make another choice because it just doesn't work. Unfortunately, that's the reality of her district. A lot of times, the very Somalis who are legally in her district, right, that have come to this country and done the paperwork and are citizens, they've come here the right way. They have low turnout, so they actually aren't even showing up to vote for their interest, even if they had an opposition. And part of the failure goes to the Republican Party, who don't take the long-term strategic approach of going to these districts and beginning to peel off votes and provide some other option. So you can't just blame the voters and the Democrats if you're not there in the fight. And it's not easy. You're going to be called names. Well, big deal. If you're called a racist and you're not, then why do you care? Go in and still tackle the issues.
Yeah, I know. Almost take a Trump approach. What have you got to lose? But at least get there and make the argument, make the case.
And if you don't like Trump, Michael Jordan, 50% is showing up. I'll give him another option.
Good point. So with Elon, I've insisted, and I said we may have even talked about this on my old radio program or podcast once upon a time, but I knew that the second that they came in as freshmen, the squad, Omar, Tlaib, Bush, Cori
Presley,
Presley, all of them, and the second that Pelosi gave them committee seats and really raised them from backbenchers, pushed them right to the front, I'm like, this is going to be a disaster for Democrats. But the joke's on me because it's been a disaster for the country.
Yeah, sad disaster for the country. And now let me make the disaster worse. Because with Hakeem Jeffries, who is, the guy's a communist. There's just no other way to say it. And that's not something I use lightly. You've known me a long time. I look at his policies, look at who he is, what he advocates for, what he writes for policy. You now have a hardcore progressive in charge with those backbenchers coming to the front. Bernie Sanders was the first when he stuck his nose under the Democrat tent. But even Bernie said, look, my policies that were once considered radical are now mainstream in the party. So the leadership in Congress of the Democrat Party has now gone full on progressive. Pelosi didn't care what the squad was for her. It was a distraction for Republicans and for Americans who spent a little too much time following the pop culture princesses and princes while not paying attention to what Democrats were doing. So that's bad on us as Americans to sit and get caught up following the shiny nickels. And even within the Republican Party, we have pop culture princes and princesses, and they need to be gone. governance is what the country needs. And governance has to be based on the economy, the border, foreign policy, doctrine, national security, the things that matter to having a functioning country so we can tackle the other issues. And if we don't do that right, then all the, you know, all these social media sensations won't matter.
Yeah. Well, I, to that end, do you think, are you starting to sense a backlash against all of this radical left, or is it with us forever? I mean, are finally people starting to wake up and say, wait a damn minute. I mean, Elon Omar, hello. Elon Musk, completely different person, has taken back Twitter for better or worse. I think probably for better, really. I get a sense just in anecdotal situations, you know, a water cooler talk. People are kind of sick of this woke crap. They're sick of the hard left. What is your take on that?
Look, they'll always be here. They've been here for a century. They continue to grow their power. They now have a megaphone with social media and with failing media. When you have a Chris Wallace who can't get 48,000 people in his core demo to watch him, or a Joy Reid or a morning show at CNN that gets less than 300,000 viewers overall when they have access to 90-plus million households. So their megaphone's big, their numbers are small, but their effect is greater. So the far left will be here. What we have to do is first defeat them. There's no negotiating with them. We have to get to a point where they're not in positions to make policy decisions and then to minimize the effects of what they've done. The Joe Biden administration, in order to make any deal so Biden could have president next to his name, is willing to give up anything to the progressives. And in some of these states, you have a Gavin Newsom who has destroyed a state. You look at Texas versus California in broad numbers. Texas has a, I believe, a $33 billion surplus. And when you go to California, you have a $22 billion deficit. Now, add long-term unfunded liabilities. You look at New York State. Yeah. You look at Illinois. Look at all these states. Look at Florida. Who's doing what right and who's doing what wrong? And what policies get you there? And we've got to realize it's no longer about negotiating. There's no detente with the progressives. You simply need to destroy the progressive movement in America.
Well, I tell you what, I think that is very well said. Gavin Newsom, a week and a half ago or so, is floating this idea of not just an exit tax, because everybody's fleeing like rats from a sinking ship. They're fleeing California. Now they're saying, not only are we going to hit you with an exit tax, but once you get to your new state, we're going to try and tax you again. That, do you think that's going to fly in the courts? I cannot see that being constitutional.
I don't know how he gets past the challenges on that one. It's been tried before. John Corzine tried it in New Jersey with an exit tax, if you remember. Massachusetts, it was tried. I forget the governor before, Charlie Baker, the failed Republican governor who's currently in office. So it's been tried by other states, and it's failed. And where it fails a lot of times is not from the individual, but from the corporations and the multi-state corporations who fight back. Because if you start taxing their people, when you hire 10, 20, 30,000 people nationally or more, and your employees are paying the price for policies, you have the power to go to the governor's office and say, stop this. You have immense tax power, you're a part of the ratables, the ratable tax base.
Right.
There's a lot of opposition that's available. Problem there is some of these corporations have the woke leadership, and they, not all of them are recognizing that woke means you go broke at this point, but we're seeing that happen even more and more as they're paying the price for their policies.
Well, and you know what, David, when you mentioned woke leadership in some of these corporations, I immediately thought Disney versus DeSantis. DeSantis kicked their ass, and basically they capitulated. They tried to go woke, and then, of course, it cost Chapek, or whatever his name was, his job. He's gone. They bring Michael Eisner back in. And it was all because they decided to fight DeSantis. It sounds like what you're describing as how we need to fight these folks is exactly what Ron DeSantis is doing down in Florida.
If someone's using power against you in whatever form, political power, corporate power, power of well-funded groups. You can't fight them just by going to the ballot box. You have to fight them with lawfare, and you have to fight them with the power of the purse. In Disney's case, by the way, to add to that, that was a tipping point for Disney, but they already had problems in France with failing operations, in China with failing operations. So their shareholders were literally saying, enough is this already, and Eisner came back to try and fix it.
Well, there you go. Well, David, there's the ugly music. We got to go. I want to thank David Webb. Thank you, brother, for being a part of the show again. Great, great time with you today. We look forward to doing it again. I'm Steve Hook. This is the Steve Hook Show on TNT Radio. Thank you, David Webb. Goodbye.